I think one of the challenges sometimes in sermons is that they try to cover too much or try to say too much. And this passage is actually just very tempting to do that. There's so much here, so many of the things that we've heard throughout our years in the church, these are the passages they come from. And it's difficult words for us as well. These are the words that oftentimes challenge not only us, but challenge our communities of faith, and certainly challenges our society and our governments and our whole world. I know sometimes people get very nervous if they think somebody is going to be preaching a political sermon. And I'm not going to do that today. But I would like to point out that just simply by reading the scriptures, there are words there that speak heavy and hard to us as a people of God in a society. So I'm going to try to focus, which is sometimes hard for me, but I'm going to try to focus right in the middle of this whole passage, both literally and theologically, because this whole passage, even as you look at it and read it, but also as you think about its meaning, turns around the very center, which is one verse that says, "Do to others what you would want them to do to you." The golden rule. That in and of itself could be many, many hours of pondering and preaching, and I only have 45 minutes to preach. I'm just kidding. I don't. So instead of even going deeply into that, I want to focus even a little bit on that. Not on the whole idea, but on how it begins. How do you begin to think and do unto others the way you would want them to do to you? When I was in seminary, I had an opportunity to go to Russia. And there was a whole lot of drama on that trip, including Boris Yeltsin dissolving parliament, and our hotel was across from the Kremlin. And after he did that, the tanks and the army and all that came over and surrounded the Kremlin, and they locked us in the hotel for our safety. And we didn't know if they were there to overthrow Yeltsin or to support him. And while this was all going on, I was sitting in a meeting with a guy from the government that was helping me connect with churches over there. And he was listening to it all going on. And he was writing, he'd be writing, reading, he'd stop, he'd say, "Oh, that's Yeltsin." I'm like, "Oh," he had the recording going on in his office. So he'd write. And he'd stop, say, "Oh, they're crazy, they're crazy." And he'd go on writing. And he'd stop and say, "Oh, this could mean civil war." And he'd go on and continue writing. And I'm sitting there thinking, why is he just writing like that? Why isn't he? And finally, I asked him, I said, "Well, what's going on?" He said, "Well, Yeltsin just dissolved parliament." He said, "But if the army stays with him, there won't be war. But we'll have to wait and see." And then he would just go back writing. I said, "Well, is there anything I should be doing, like gathering canned goods or, you know, water or something like that?" He said, "No, no." He said, "The people," he said, "only if they can get bread, they don't care." And that stuck in my mind. Because I think the first step to treating others as you would want them to treat you is to see others, to see them, really see them not as the other, not as the Russians, not as the Republicans or the Democrats or the whatever, but to see them as God's children and to know that there are things going on with them just like there are things going on with us. After that meeting, I had an interpreter and we went to McDonald's. There's a McDonald's in Moscow. And we went in, ordered a Big Mac, and it wasn't very expensive. And we came out, and when we came out, there was a little boy came up. He was a little beggar boy, and he came up and was asking for money, and so I gave him $1. And I didn't realize what I'd done. Because just the amount that it cost me to buy that Big Mac extra value meal, that was enough money to buy 100 loaves of bread for people. And so he ran off, and shortly, just seconds after that, there were a crowd of kids all around me, and they were begging, and they were holding on my hands, and they were kissing my hands. I was trying to get in the car, and I finally got in the car, and they kept hanging on the car, and the guy got out of the car, was like swinging at the kids, and they were flinching because they were afraid he was going to hit them, and it was just all so much. And I watched, I had seen the boy I gave the dollar to run off and the interpreter with us. I said, well, where's he going? She said, he has to give the money to a group of older boys over there or else they'll beat him up. And after the older boys saw me give him $1, they sent out all the other younger boys to get another dollar or else they would get. See, if I hadn't asked the question and delved into it just a little bit more, I would have just thought, as sad and as hard as it is, that that was just a demonstration of a little beggar boy. But it wasn't. It was a demonstration of an entire system where all these kids had been taken advantage of and were being used. I think the first step to understanding people and treating them as we would want to be treated is to see them and to see their lives. I work a lot with child welfare and social work. And I know sometimes I hear people, and it makes me really sad when I hear people that go to church say this kind of stuff, where they'll say things like, oh, well, they just want to live on welfare, or, oh, they're just being lazy, they don't want to work. And I get to see the very insides of these cases and of these people's lives. And my friends, I can honestly say, if my life was anything like theirs, I too would be on drugs and alcohol and do everything that I could to get away from the pain. Being able to truly see and have compassion and have empathy for the other is the first step to treating others as we would want them to treat us. I think the other step, though, is for us to be able to pay attention and root out in us the prejudice and the things that are inside. Because it just happens. Even really good people can have prejudice and preconceived ideas about others, and we see others as other, there's something different, or they're those people, or something like that. It's just so easy to do. I lived on a farm, and I'd go back sometimes, walk through the fields, and you know, when you walk through the fields and you come out on the other side and they have those little burrs that have stuck to your pants. I think sometimes that's how prejudice, how preconceived ideas happen to us. It's not always by choice. Sometimes it's just how we walk through life and things get stuck on us. And the only way to get those off, you can't just throw them in a washer. The only way to get those things off is to see them and pick them off one at a time. So I think it's really important for us not only to see and ask questions and pay attention and have empathy for people, but also to constantly ask ourselves, what is God shining a light on that we can take away and pick off so that we might be more like Christ. I'm sad to say that in our time and place in this society, it's very easy, and there's a lot of burrs and stickers coming our way. And it's very hard to pay attention and pick them all off and see what it's doing to us. But I think what Jesus is saying in this passage as a whole is we have to pay attention to how we see people. And we have to go far beyond what we would normally do to care for them and understand them. There's this poem I read the other day I'd like to read for you. It's by Pat Mora. It's called Elena. It says, "My Spanish isn't good enough. I remember how I'd smile, listening my little ones, understanding every word they'd say. Their jokes, their songs, their plots. But that was in Mexico. Now my children go to American high schools. They speak English. At night, they sit around the kitchen table, laugh with one another. I stand at the stove and feel dumb, alone. I bought a book to learn English. My husband frowned, drank more beer. My oldest said, 'Mama, he doesn't want you to be smarter than he is.' I'm 40, embarrassed at my mispronouncing words, embarrassed at the laughter of my children, the grocery, the mailman. Sometimes I take my English book and lock myself in the bathroom, say the thick words softly. For if I stop trying, I will be deaf when my children need my help." That's not just the other. That's not just an illegal immigrant or someone from another place. That's a mother watching as her children form lives where she's left out. And I think all of us can understand that in some way. All of us can have some empathy towards that. And that, I think, is the beginning of being able to treat others the way you would want them to treat you. Because if we look at people's lives, I'm convinced every life, we will see the heroic stories that are in every single life. The people that have overcome, the people that have fought through, the people that are trying to sustain and keep going on. Every single one of us, if for a moment God gave us the eyes to see, has that hero story going on inside of us. They are us. We are them, wherever we and they may be. Jesus gives some powerful and tough words in this passage about forgiving, about giving, about the expectations that we should have for ourselves and for others. But it all centers around this idea of treating that person, whoever it is, the way you would want them to treat you. That's hard. That makes hard work. but it also makes our lives and their lives a little bit easier if we care and love, empathize, and try to understand one another just a little bit more. Amen.